What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. I'd like to thank you first for checking out the series. If it's your first time here, you're not a subscriber, I do hope by the end of this at least you will hit that subscribe button. Of course, you can find us at all the major podcast hotspots like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere you like to get your podcast from. That's where you can find us. We'll bring you new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday so you can keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover some new ones, know what's happening in the music world. Kyle Meredith with wherever you get your podcasts. And that's me. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I'm going to be talking with Buzz Osborne, back with a new King Buzzo released called Gift of Sacrifice. This sees him teaming back up with his sometime musical collaborator Trevor Dunn for an acoustic record, and we'll talk about that, what going acoustic means for him as far as if it has to alter the way he writes a song. He'll tell us about being inspired by Miles Davis, and what sets this one apart, this release apart. Acoustic bass, modular synth, we'll talk about alternate tunings, and then we'll talk about a whole lot of other things as well. How the Melvins are extremely underestimated amid bad criticism, unjust criticism, I should say. We'll talk a lot about science, evolution, and religion. And there's lots of deep roads into those subjects here. So let's get into it. And this record, Gift of Sacrifice, it's Kyle Meredith with Buzz Osborne.
Hey, this is Buzz.
First off, Gift of Sacrifice has been a really enjoyable listen. I really love what you're doing with this. I mean, you've always done interesting music, and this goes with it. As the story goes, for those who don't know, this is your second solo record.
Yes.
As you're joined by your friend Trevor Dunn on here as well, who you've played with in a couple projects. But this once again finds you in the acoustic world. And for you, does that actually change how you write a song? Does the style of guitar actually, you know, alter the way you approach how you put a song together?
Oh, no, not at all. I write a lot of the Melvin songs on acoustic guitar or acoustically on an electric guitar. You know, I don't have to have some blasting amp. As a matter of fact, most of the songs I write, no matter what, where they end up, are not blasted through an amplifier at top volume. They're generally worked out on an acoustic or acoustically. And then I will record those riffs and then take them into practice where I will play them at a much louder volume, but we tend to rehearse at a quiet volume, almost enough to where you can talk over it. And we like to rehearse, especially at the beginning of rehearsals, without using a PA so that we can sing quiet enough to where we can sing without having a PA and you can hear it. So the drummer plays lightly with brush type sticks and we play really quiet, and it makes it to where you can really, really hear what everybody's doing a lot better. And you get a lot tighter and you get a lot more out of it. And you can talk as you're playing over the stuff without it. You know, I prefer that, especially for rehearsing new songs or new songs that you want to play live.
So then is this just about presenting it in a different way? Presenting it as the acoustic side? Is that the point?
Well, I mean, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it's another thing I can do without too much difficulty. 5 years ago or so, 6 years ago when I did my last one, I wasn't really sure if that would work. And it worked fine. I did a whole European tour, U.S. tour, went to Australia, all that, you know, and it was a challenge. I don't have the other guys to hide behind. I mean, in the Melvins, right now I play with Stephen McDonald from Red Cross and Dale, who I've played with since 1984. And, you know, with a rhythm section like that, it's difficult to lose. You know, I mean, those guys are really good players. And so you're capable of as a unit, you're much stronger than any one individual person's in a band situation. So if you've got a good drummer and a good bass player, not unlike Led Zeppelin or The Who, you know, the songwriter is halfway there. And so that's made it a lot easier. So it was a lot easier as far as, like, you can get up there and hide behind their talents to some degree. But when you've got an acoustic guitar and it's you with a microphone, that's it. It's a little more difficult. And I was up for the challenge. But, you know, I could take any Melvin song that we do and play them acoustically and have it be effective. I would just change out the stuff that wasn't really working and move the song around a little bit, not unlike what Bob Dylan always has done or any number of other people who change things up. And me as a fan, I don't mind it when people do that kind of stuff. I like it. Like, you know, if you gave Tom Waits an acoustic guitar and said play any of your songs, he'd be able to do it. It would be fine. It'd be really good. You know, that's kind of how what my attitude was towards the whole thing. And then adding Trevor Dunn on this record has just been a A+, next level type of thing, which is great. And I love Trevor to death. And I think he's a super talented bass player and easy to deal with. And my favorite thing that I got out of my relationship with Phantomas was my ongoing relationship with Trevor Dunn.
You had mentioned Tom Waits and a few other people there. I've also, I think I read somewhere that, you know, Miles Davis was mentioned as well. And how does his influence factor into the record, if I did read that correctly?
Well, he's factored into a lot of our records for a long time, but mostly just the electric era of Miles Davis, a la Big Fun, Bitches Brew, On the Corner, especially On the Corner. That's been a huge, massive influence on what we've done for decades, you know, at least 2.5 decades. And I can't really stress that enough as far as that's concerned. People don't hear that and they should just listen to the drumming. We are all about that kind of stuff. So people tend to underestimate what we're capable of doing, which is a mistake.
Why do you think that is?
Because most people that are writing reviews or writing reviews of concerts or records don't do their homework and aren't really fans at the beginning and are not going to become fans. And so they generally, when people, like, if I tell you something, you know, this is true, you should check, you know, this is true, and you look, you go, okay, you'll immediately do a Google search. You will look as far as the answers that you want. You will look no further than that. And that's that tends to be what people do with everything. Well, I don't think that's true. You look up, well, there it is. It's not true. You know, well, then behind that are 50 stories that saying that it is true, or 50 things that are telling you a whole different opinion or picture of what it is you're doing, or 50 albums by us that don't sound like the album that you just listened to. You have no idea what we're doing. You know, you've listened to 2% of what we've done and decided you know exactly what we're all about. You know, I just think, you know, what kind of people do you think we are?
I was going to say, it is interesting the way you do explain that, because obviously that is, I mean, as far as the internet goes, as far as news cycles goes, I mean, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for.
If you look, and they usually tend to look as far as what they're looking for. That cements what exactly they think, and then they move no further than that and look no further than that at all. And then tend to only read, which newspapers figured out a long time ago, tend to only read the first chapter or the first couple paragraphs when in actuality the devil is in the details.
Right.
You have to keep digging, and then they're, oh, wait, that's not exactly what I thought, you know. But that tends to never happen. So I have little to no, I don't have much time for that kind of stuff. I just think, okay, you're an idiot, and just leave it at that. Or you see a bad review and you go, okay, let's look at what else this guy likes or girl likes. And you go, oh, they like nothing but crap. Good. Well, no wonder they don't like us. I hate all the records they think are amazing. So there you go. It's not surprising. But we've literally had prominent magazines that shall go unnamed at the moment that have just said to our publicist, we will never write a good review of their band because we don't like them. It doesn't matter what they do. They have a stick up their butt about us. That's been the case for our entire career, one form or another. Forever, literally for the better part of 40 years, I've had to deal with that kind of bullshit. You know, that's how it works.
Because, I mean, you even think like there's a chance when the journalists are going to cycle out as they do every few years, you know.
They do. It does.
You know, the lifers, you know, are few and far between. You know, I would assume that would offer more chances to get past that or something like that. That's really.
But there's been people that run magazines or owners who just said, no. You know, super prominent drum magazine hated Dale, hated what he did. And until that guy, the owner or the manager, was gone, the second he was gone, Dale was on the cover of the magazine. Not just an article, on the cover of the magazine. Which, that's pretty amazing. You know, but that's how it works. That's how it works. Passed over, which is, you know, I don't. The thing is, people would think that I you must be bitter about that stuff. I'm not really. I'm just pointing it out. If I was bitter, I'd have quit a long time ago. I'm not bitter. I love what we're doing. I love the people that come and see us. I couldn't be more appreciative. I love making music. I love doing all this stuff. It's what I do. And I'm up for the challenge. And, you know, people, someone wants to debate me about any issue, music or otherwise, I'm ready to go.
Well, you've already won. You're still here. You're still doing this. You're still putting out interesting, relevant music. So you win automatically.
I appreciate it. Thank you. But we've operated like, especially me, I've operated like I would like it other bands to operate if I was a fan of that band. You know, how I would like to see someone else operate is how we operate. That's it. What I would appreciate musically, fan-wise, or musically, how they do stuff live or whatever, I would appreciate. I try to figure out what that is and incorporate that into what we're doing. You know, because we're essentially, music is art, and we as artists want to contribute something to society that normal people don't get in their everyday lives. I want to give them something they don't normally get. And that's my entire job. And I'm up for that challenge. I will try to do that as best as I can.
I absolutely love that. So I'm going to use that, but ask a bit of a generic question as we pull this back around to Gift of Sacrifice in this record.
Yeah.
What are you offering this time that's different? As you said, you know, this is the way you write songs a lot of time. That part's not very different, yeah. You know, on the acoustic. What are you offering different this time?
Well, just the addition of the acoustic bass on my records is a big deal. We did that kind of thing with Freak Puke, which is a Melvin's Light with Trevor, but it wasn't with acoustics. So I'm trying to offer something. Well, when I say I'm offering them something that they don't normally get in their line in people's lives, that would be, I'm imagining the vast majority of people out there don't listen to anything remotely like us. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm offering an alternative to what is normal out there. And I'm writing it in a way that I think is good. Not that I think they will like, but that I think I will like. And if I like it, I figure that other people will like it as well.
Well, I'll point out one of the, you know, the additions to this, one of the things that makes this somewhat different than anything, and it sounds so simple on paper, but it's really such a contrast, is that you it sounds like you purposely said, let's pair the modular synth with these acoustics. What drove you in that direction?
I got into modular synth stuff a while back from my buddy Jesse from Atlanta. And I realized that what I needed to do on my next acoustic record is do acoustic and modular synth. I hadn't heard anybody do that. And so I was kind of interested in doing that sort of thing. And then later I got the idea when I was planning my tour for this over a year ago, which was canceled. I go, Trevor, me and you should tour together. And then maybe we can record a couple songs and we could sell like a tour only EP on the tour, you know? And he was like, that sounds great. And then once he got out here, I go, well, try playing on one of these songs. And then he ended up playing on almost the whole record. That's why it's a King Buzzo record with Trevor Dunn, as opposed to a King Buzzo Trevor Dunn record, because we didn't write it together. You know, we wrote some of the stuff together, but by and large, the record was done before he added his parts. But I am not stupid enough to not include something that obviously makes everything way better. You know, So that's what I did. He's plays in the lion's share of the whole record, so fine with me.
Yeah, I'll ask this question knowing that I probably won't actually understand the answer, but I'm still interested in it. And I say that in the fact that there may not be a follow-up question if I don't understand it. But hearing about you talking about dreaming up a bunch of different tunings for the record, would you talk a little bit more about that? And when you, as you say, dreaming up the tunings, like, do you have to keep specific notes when you're doing that, when you're getting outside of the norms?
Yeah, I do. I always have. But what happens is that I'll discover things that somebody already discovered a long time ago. You know, just, I'm just tuning the guitar to fifths. That's what I'm doing, you know. But I don't read music or anything like that. So I'll just mess around with different tunings until I find something that sounds good, or start with an open E tuning and change it a bit, or, you know, do a wide variety of things. So we've always done that. I've done that since, mid to late 80s. Always change tunings. I don't understand why, when people are teaching someone to play guitar, why don't they start with an open tuning? You know, if you don't play guitar, I can have you play with an open tuning. I can have you playing guitar in 5 minutes, as opposed to them struggling along trying to learn these fingerings and all this weird stuff. It's like they've lost the joy of what it is to make some kind of music on a guitar. I can show you how to do that almost instantaneously. And then maybe that would grow an interest in these people, and they would take it from there. And then they can learn to do the fingerings or not, or whatever. There's no right or wrong way to do this. You know, an open tuning, I wish someone would have showed me that from the beginning. It would have saved me a lot of trouble. You know, the Stones do it. They're in the business.
Richie Havens, the king of it right there. When I watch him, it's just mind-blowing. Like, I do the same thing. Why didn't I learn that?
Yeah, it's fine. But, you know, I mean, if you want to play like something, you should play like that. You don't have to learn the basics, you know, Segovia or whoever. Fuck all that, you know. If that's what you want to play, then learn that. If you want to play some other kind of lead, screaming lead guitar, listen to the guys at Slayer. Don't bother learning a bunch of muddy water stuff. You know, there's no point. You know, it's music. It's not ultimately important beyond that. You know, we do this as an extra thing in our life, and we are afforded that luxury. And music speaks to us in the most primal way, right into the middle of our hearts. And it always has since the dawn of time. What makes music cool? I don't know, but it's in my blood, you know? There it is. That's like a Sean O'Connor talking about wise blood, you know. My blood's wiser than someone else's. You know, it's like, it's in my blood. This is why. That's how it works.
Pardon the cliche, but I've always felt that's why the line, it's only rock and roll, is such a powerful line. Because at one side, it dismisses it from being too serious. But on the other side, it says everything about its importance.
But I like it. It's only rock and roll, but I like it. I mean, you know, what's the earliest form of music? Probably drumming. When did that start? Lord knows.
Yeah. I'll switch it in a little bit to the, you know, to what you're singing about within the lyrics. And actually, I'm going to concentrate on one title. And again, I'm going back to things I've read in the past where you said, you know, you're not, in the past at least, you've said this, that you weren't a big fan of writing topical or political or anything of that nature. But when you see a title like Science in Modern America, you know, of course, I get curious in, like, you know, what does that mean to you right now? Because I feel like that is a very hot topic, even if it's not specifically stating science. We now have an entire population who might disagree with what we see as factual things.
Yeah, well, facts change. I mean, it wasn't even that long ago that the world was flat, remember?
That's true.
That all changed. And what did Einstein say on his deathbed? All my theories are correct. I'm paraphrasing now. All my theories are correct as long as physics is exactly the way I think it is. If it's not, then everything I think is wrong. Right. That's it. That is it. If you are so rigid that you refuse to bend, then something like the Melvins never would have happened. You know, that's it. And with science, it's like science is it's not exact. I mean, everybody understands what theory is and things like that. It's just you know, you can think that that's true. But things that you're doing now, 100 years from now, will be considered completely barbaric. Like, I don't know what, but like, they were drinking out of plastic. Everybody knows plastic causes cancer, you know, I mean, or whatever they're going to discover. You know, they were living in houses without virus scrubbers. Can you believe that? You know what I mean? It's going to be all these things that we think that are so important at this point right now will be absolute barbarism in the future.
Well,
you know?
Then to double down on the question, is that where you're coming from on that song? Just making sure I understand.
Could be, you know, I mean, I just think it's not they say it's science, but nothing's an exact science. As long as we don't think that we're all that, everything's going to be okay. we're okay. It's life is a series of compromises. There's no right or wrong. You know, it's just a compromise. That's it. We are flawed from the beginning. Then you take it from there. Children are born Lord of the Flies. They have to learn how to be civilized. You know, that's how it was. Just like with our dogs. The older dogs teach the younger dogs how to act. That's it. Left to their own devices, it's Lord of the Flies. And then there's a bunch of stuff in there. I just try not to get too, you know, crazy about what is real and what isn't real. It's only real right now because we haven't thought of something better, you know. And if you're just looking at something like the perception of something as simple as, like, you know, the resurrection, or, you know, or what is it that the Christians believe, they're going to be brought back to life. I can't remember the name of it. But if you think of that in terms on a science level, then it's true, because on a molecular level, you never really go anywhere when you die. And so that means your essence is here. And if they get smart enough, eventually they will be able to raise you from the dead. So science and religion in a lot of ways are really similar. What they're thinking and how they operate is not a whole lot different from each other. And once we get to a point where those two things merge, that's when real progress is going to happen. To me. You see what I mean, though?
Yeah, no, actually, so I was thinking, there was an author, Daniel Quinn, passed away a few years ago. He had wrote this story about an anthropologist who goes back in time and you know, searching the world, and he finally sees a blob out in the ocean. He says, I'm going to interview that blob and ask him about his creation story. And the blob says, you know, there was a big bang, and then there were these tiny little molecules that met and everything. And you know, and he goes through the whole story, as we've heard of evolution, from the single cells. And he said, and then eventually jellyfish. And he holds, you know, out his proverbial hands or whatever. Like, and that's the end of the story. And jellyfish, because what could come after this? You know, it's...
Yeah. What could possibly happen after this?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, evolution, everybody believes in evolution. That just means change over time. That's all it means. There's nobody who doesn't believe in change over time. Even the church. They believe that. So this whole idea, you don't believe in evolution. Everybody believes in evolution. Everybody believes in evolution. Everybody does. You know, it's just that now you're going to get lost in the details of it. And then that's where all of it goes out the window. Both religion and science just goes right out the window. You guys are talking to me. I never went to church and I never went to college. So to me, they're both talking about the same goddamn thing. It's no different.
Well, that's, you know, the pullback.
It's a leap of faith. All of it is a leap of faith. All of it, you know.
Luxury of a pullback view. I mean, everybody gets so trapped in the weeds. And if you're from the point of view that you're coming at, where you weren't raised in the weeds in the same way, it's much easier to see that, you know, pale blue dot experience.
Yes. It's like when I went to Jerusalem. Three religions intersecting at the same point, none of which I have anything to do with. And I'm seeing, as an outsider, I'm looking at, you guys are talking about the same goddamn thing. Only you don't see that. I see it. It's no different. If I came from another planet, I would come down here and go, what are you talking about? You're talking about the same thing. That's the problem. People like Joseph Campbell understood that. You know, they understood. He understood it. He understood it decades ago, that was the point of all this. And then the whole thing, whatever is good, gets lost in the details of it, you know. And so that's what I've tried, not necessarily in that song, but, you know, when I think about, are you spiritual, well, it's like I'm not arrogant enough to say it's not possible for that to happen, you know. Or who was it, Groucho Marx said the thing he hated about atheists is they talk about God too much, you know. You know, I'm not part of any of that. I don't feel any kinship towards any of those things. I also don't feel any kinship towards you know, race of any kind. You know, I think, you know, race pride is simply just, it's just stupid. It's like, you know, I am Jewish, probably English and Italian. When I go to any of those places, do I feel like I'm home? This is where my people come from. No, that's not it. I'm not home in any of those places. I don't feel a kinship toward any of those people because of what's happened to them. I have my own experience living my own life in my own world. And I'm not going to get tarnished by the idiocy of the people that have come before me. I'm not going to do it. You know, I don't feel a kinship to any of them or anyone other than where I was born and how I grew up. That is my world and what I am. If I go and live in Italy, I will always be an outsider. Doesn't matter what skin tone I have. You know, if I go and live in England, I am an outsider. That doesn't mean I can't make it work. I could make it work anywhere because I'm not stupid. But as far as like who I am, you know, racial, looking at it from race or heritage is just stupid. To me, it's just stupid. You can go ahead and do that, but I'm not spinning my wheels like that. And I will not join in, you know, with that kind of insane tribalism. I can't do it. Just like with science and religion, both of them have their points. I can't say this is right and this is wrong. I can't do it. I can't be involved in that. I just can't do it. And just like with the band, I can't be involved in all these other things that people want to lump us into. I'm not any of those things, you know? That's, I might have pieces and parts of me might be involved in those things, but as far as like, am I that thing? I am not that thing. I am my own thing. I don't, and I, once again with Groucho Marx, I am a Groucho Marxist. I don't want to join any club that would have me as a member.
Heritage is only a definition if you ignore, you know, a few million years before that spot. What I mean is, if I say my family is from Scotland, it's like, yeah, but they weren't, you know, just snapped into creation from there. Their family came from somewhere else in Europe, and their family came from the Middle East, and their family came from Africa, and it's...
Who knows? As far yeah, as they right. were, as far as we know, they were beamed down from another planet. We have no idea. A lot of people, they don't want to get into those sorts of things, or they just look at you like you're an idiot, and you know, it's like, no, you're really missing what I'm saying. You're missing. Fortunately, you're picking up on what I'm saying, you know? Which is good, but that doesn't always happen. So you say just keep my trap shut about all of it because I don't really want to get into it with people. I don't really want to start at square one, why I think what I think. And it's a long story, and I am complicated and moody when it comes to it.
Because people are complicated, and that's okay. And
good.
That's,
I'm complicated and moody. You know? It starts happening, I get into a bad mood. I start losing it.
Let me, I'll switch back up, because I do want to hit on the album a little bit more here and sort of adjust the philosophy. And, you know, this is sort of speculative question here, too, because we hear these really cool, I want to say something times carnivalesque instrumental breaks that kind of flow throughout the record. When you guys were going to play this live, obviously that none of that's happening for anybody right now. Do you pay attention to those moments on a record? Like, I'd wondered if something like Junkie Jesus gets to be something different, you know, when you take it out in that Miles Davis sort of way.
Oh, it could be. Yeah. We never felt, even with the Melvins, we never felt that this, you know, that the songs were that precious. It's like they're merely suggestions and what can happen. You know, Bowie had a really good thing I never forgot where he told Adrian Belew, you know, here's the songs, play them like this or make them better. Right. You know, I mean, we'll play songs for a long time. I don't revisit my back catalog a whole lot. I'll go back and listen to a song we've been playing live for the last 2 years and go, you know, we are actually playing this wrong. I remembered it wrong, but whatever. That's okay. You know, there's no rules. I mean, I'm not going to get dragged before the committee somewhere. And just because it's on a record doesn't mean I have to do it like that. Or maybe I will. I don't know. You know, I mean, people like Alice Cooper never worried about that. Pink Floyd never really worried about it. And there's bands now, we want it to sound like the record. Well, good for you. You know, we'll make your records easier to play then. That way you don't have to play to a bunch of fucking tapes. Or digital now, so it's not even tape. So that's what you want to do. It's just not my thing. You know, we're bringing it back to its most primal level. No smoke and mirrors. What you see is what you get. If we can't make it work on that level, I don't really care. I don't go to big rock shows. You know, if I go to a hockey arena, I want to see hockey. I don't want to see a rock show. I don't like those places. I rarely ever do that sort of thing. I prefer the intimacy of what we were doing, you know, where we're doing it. That's what turned me on in the early 80s to punk rock. You know, that kind of thing. Although we still liked stadium rock and all that kind of stuff. I still like all that stuff. I just don't prefer to go to it. I haven't for a long time. I'll go once in a great while, but not often. I don't care about rock show. Oh, it's a great show. Well, you know, no matter how big a show you have at your little rock concert, it's not going to be as good as the stuff that Disney does. So why don't you just quit trying?
I'll agree and say it's very, very rare.
Much better.
Yeah. I'll agree and say it's very rare that no matter how much I love a band, that, you know, if it's at a stadium, that I'll actually have the time that I expect to have. Like no matter how many times I've seen The Who in the stadium, it's never the show I want to. Maybe, and I'll say this, Springsteen did it. He did it for me. And that might be it as far as the stadium shows.
I saw Springsteen once. I thought a third of the show was really good. A third of it was pretty good. And a third of the show, if I'd had a deer rifle, I'd have killed him myself.
Well, the connection was there, I think, is what I'm getting at, you know, music aside or anything like that. Like, but what I'm getting at is that I agree. It's extremely rare. The stadium shows never work the way the connection for me that
not for,
I never get it.
No, I never get it. I find myself distracted, you know, and I really, honestly, even in a small place, I really only like a band for about maybe 20 minutes to 35 minutes. And then I've pretty much seen all I need to see and I'm good. I would prefer watching a band play their best 40 minutes of music than 90 minutes, but we can't get away with that. people would get a much better show if they would let us do that, you know, and every band would. I don't understand. 3-hour concerts, just, you know, a 3-hour concert, a 3-hour, oh God, you know, forget it. I want nothing to do with it.
Well, let me give, I'll wrap here with the compliments. Gift of Sacrifice, once again, I love what you're doing these days, and I hope you continue to do it. I don't know what the next steps are, and I do want to see this live eventually. So thanks, man. Thanks for what you do.
I think me and Trevor want to make a whole new record and then tour that.
Do
it. That's what we want to do. And I really appreciate your support, and thank you so much.
Anytime, Buzz. Thanks so much. Take care, man.
Talk to you later.
My thanks, Buzz Osborne, the new King Buzzo with Trevor Dunn. Album is called Gift of Sacrifice. Thanks to you as well for checking out this episode. Again, before you get out of here, do hope you'll hit that subscribe button. Find us at all the spots, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening from right now. You can type it in. We'll bring you brand new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. WFPK.org, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots as well, at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along to keep up over there. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Well, you know, rock and rollers being early, that must throw you for a loop. It must be the curvature of the earth. I only know whatever I can drive to in a couple of within a couple of minutes. That's it. I've forgotten everything else. I'm going to do this interview, and then I'm going to go and play golf. I'm a professional, so I understand what it takes to work on that level. Just enough to make me look like an idiot. It's not hard to do. You can do it with almost anyone. You give me an interview with you long enough, I can make you look like a total fool. Never let the truth get in the way. You know? I prefer to remember things my own way anyway. Okay, here we go.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.